Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Josh Brown, this is the wind-up. Usually I don't do a regular intro, but I'm going to do it, goddammit.
Look how far we've come. Look at us. We've got a proper intro and everything now. No preamble. Who would have thought? Straight into it.
I know, a proper official introduction for the wind-up podcast. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
We're sitting a bit closer because, funnily enough, we're going to take a segment of this podcast and put it up on the YouTube channel. So go over there and watch the video version of us as well, sit in recording this thing. Because why not share, you know, the big enough talking points in video form?
Well, this is it. We thought we're going to cover spoilers, but Sony Showcase, which has been heavily rumoured and has a bunch of games that have apparently leaked for it. And we thought, instead of just doing the same thing twice, doing an extended podcast talk on it and then a little news video on it, why not just make the extended good, hopefully, podcast chat the news itself? We've got this nice studio that we never film, yet we record it all the time. Why not see if people like this, and hopefully they do.
They will. I'm sure they will. There's so many TVs and things to set up in this room, but we did it. There's lovely graphics for you to see. Come to the video version, see that thing.
Though we should say, we appreciate everyone listening now, because this bit won't be on YouTube. We're only...
Not on YouTube.
No. Only you get to listen to our absolute bile at the start of these podcasts while we try to figure out in real time
That
is what people want.
Hitting the record button and figure it out in real time. So, wind up is always whatever we're playing, whatever's going on in the industry, the talking points, etc. And the biggest thing, like Josh said, is the Sony Showcase. Seemingly at the end of May, but we'll get to that in good time. We thought we'd still open on the things we're playing. I can't talk about the thing I'm playing, but I can reveal that I've been playing a hell of a lot of Tears of the Kingdom.
Is that right?
Yeah, I can only cover things that have already been released. So the trailers are good, aren't they? They've got trailers like nobody's business.
They look pretty good, Scott Tilford. Pretty decent.
Zelda's
trailers.
In there, Link's in there.
I'm so excited for the end of this week when you can finally tell me everything about this game. Though only after I've played it myself.
Yes, you definitely need to get stuck into it. This game is very much a pool and everybody should go play in it and swim in it, and then talk to me about the way they swam.
That was lovely and diplomatic. I like the way you've navigated that.
I can't say anything specific, and I don't want to say anything specific. I will just say I am fascinated by this game, and I can't wait for people to experience it. I know that's vague as hell, I just want to see what... I want to know what the critics think of it. I want to know what the general discourse is at the end of the week. I want to see what people think. I want to know what you think. And then I want to see all the gameplay clips, because it's... I've not kept up with any of the preview stuff whatsoever. I just watched the initial couple of trailers, and then thankfully they gave us a couple of weeks ago, which is awesome. And so I've been working through that, but I just can't wait to see what the world makes of this game. This is one of the weirdest games I've ever had to review, and I will leave it at that.
What a lovely kind of era we're in right now. I feel like we're back-to-back major releases that I just can't wait to talk about, from Resi to Tears of the Kingdom, which I'm excited to jump into, almost like there's too many games. But Scott Tilford, I can definitely talk about Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I know I briefly mentioned it last week on the podcast where I played 5 or 6 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm now 32 hours into this game.
Ooh, have you left Kobo yet?
And I finally left Kobo.
The first planet's a doozy.
Ironically, I'm back on Kobo now. I went to finish everything off there. Yeah, the first planet is a doozy. All the planets in this game are a doozy. There's not many of them, but they are so packed with content. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'm 32 hours into this game, I think, is testament to the size of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot said, rightly so, about the technical problems that the game has had at launch across all of the different versions. But it's crazy to me that they've made a game this dense with content in 3.5 years or whatever it is. It's such a step up mechanically and from a visual presentation as well. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the content that's in there, it's so varied and it's so dense and it's so packed in there that it's just... just been an absolute joy to play. I hesitate to say this due to the issues that it has and with still being a few missions away from completion, but I'm tempted to give this a 5-star rating, Scott Tilford. I'm loving it so much.
It's a lot of people, the more they play through, I was looking at Ryan McCaffrey's tweet, IGN's Ryan McCaffrey saying he's in that beautiful sweet spot in the middle where you have no idea where the end is, and you've left the tutorial stuff, you have all your abilities, and he's like, that's the best part of a game, when you just enjoy the whole middle chunk of it. You had a hell of a saga with this game over the weekend, though, where it tried to eat your save and then spat it back out again.
This is it. This is why I feel like it wants to hurt me for enjoying it. Not only does it freak out when I touch a tiny bit of water in the game because the frame rate drops.
I want to say something about the frame rate in a bit.
In the cutscenes themselves also drop frames, which is really frustrating when you have these lushly choreographed lightsaber battles, for instance, and yet the frame rate is like 10 frames per second in the cutscenes. That's a shame. But also it ate my save. It was the bank holiday weekend over in the UK, and all I wanted to do, because I had the house to myself on Friday night, so all I wanted to do was jump into Jedi Survivor and play it all night. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when I opened Jedi Survivor and loaded my save, the PS5 crashed, and then it crashed again, and then it kept crashing every single time I tried to load the save.
Right.
So I looked online for fixes. One was rebuild the database of the PS5, so I did that. Still crashed. Mm-hmm. One was start a new game, which you could do, and then reload the old save. Did that. It also crashed.
Right.
I uninstalled the whole game, which is like 128 gigabytes, and then reinstalled it, which took like 2 hours. And then it still didn't work. It still wouldn't load the save.
The takeout food you got's cold by now.
Everything's cold. It's like 10 o'clock at night. The whole night's gone. My crisps have been devoured already. And then I just started playing a new game, not with the intention of restarting it, because I was going to put this game down forever had it broken completely. But I just thought, let's get to this first meditation point, make a manual save there and see how we go. And I think that's what saved it, because I did that and I reloaded the save and then it let me in. And I was like, why not the five other ones? Big whys, you know, I just didn't understand what was going on there. Still don't know necessarily what fixed it, but that almost soured me on this potential 5-star game. And it's such a shame that the game has those issues, because I want to come out and say this is a 5-star experience. It's a must buy. Mm. It's worth the £70, which I didn't expect it to be, because it's so rich with content. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that because it has these issues that still aren't patched.
That's definitely the thing that is making me, like I said, I've been playing infinitely Tears of the Kingdom. I haven't played anything else in like a week and a bit. I've been a little bit of Dredge when I've been on the train.
Yeah.
But still, I hate the way this game moves. Like, I went back and after they patched it, and it's just so, like, the quality mode is obviously beautiful, but then you have to deal with 30 FPS, and that is more solid, but it still feels like it's dipping when you're in combat, and then performance is smoother overall, but you're losing so much background detail, and you can see it, like, you can see the trees de-res when you switch between them.
Yeah.
It's a living hell.
I'm going to say something right now.
Do it.
Performance mode on this game, at least on PS5, is dog. It's not worth the trade-off. Mm. Like, yeah, you get it. It's a little bit faster, a little bit more responsive, but I finally experimented with it over the weekend on some tough boss fights that I just kind of wanted a bit more responsiveness for.
Yeah.
And I didn't find it that much of an improvement in terms of the game feel. Like, even going back to quality mode immediately after, of course, you can see the difference. Mm. But I prefer quality mode because I think it's the nice balance of the kind of the lush next-gen visuals and still fairly responsive combat, because you're absolutely right. Like, the resolution just tanks. The game looks kind of muddy and blurry when you're playing on performance mode. And that's a shame, because the game plays so well.
Yeah, we've talked about loads, the whole frame rate debate and everything. And I've switched over. Like, now that I experience 60 and loads of stuff, I can't talk about Zelda stuff. But, like, in general, when I'm starting experiencing games that run really well, it's just that thing of, like, it just needs that consistent frame rate. I don't mind if you dip. Well, sorry, I don't mind it being at 30 as long as it's completely solid. And you can feel it in Survivor dipping, and I can feel it in combat, and it takes me out of it. And I'm just like, I feel like I can see the frames hitching. There's something about it where I'm just like, this feels horrible.
It's fascinating that, because I've not had that experience at all. Maybe I've just been lucky, but in actual combat, like, the frames, the frame rate has been solid. Like, it's only been, like I said, around those, like, kind of pools of water or in cutscenes. But
so
in
random.
The 98% of the time, it's just in regular gameplay. Mm. I've actually had a rock solid frame rate in 30 in quality mode, which has been a lifesaver, because, yeah, I would be with you. I would not be playing this game if the combat hitched in any way significantly.
That's exactly where I am. And I'm sort of like, I know they patched it. They've committed to more patches in the coming weeks. And I'm like, do I just sleep on this for a couple of weeks and, like, go play more Dredge or something? Like, it's just a weird weird feel to a game, and I'm waiting for it to kind of get a bit clearer now that I've got my time back a little bit. And so it's one of those things where I keep hearing nothing but praise, and I want to just love it. And there are definitely been pockets of it so far. We had like effusive praise last week, and the opening's awesome. Like there are parts of it that are brilliant, but for me, I'm always fighting the, it doesn't feel just right. I just put it to the back of my mind so I can keep playing.
Yeah.
But then they patched it and I thought that would fix it and it didn't. And so now every time when I go on it, I'm just sort of like, oh, it just doesn't feel right. And I'm just like, now that they've said they're doing more patches, I kind of need them to do like a final patch statement and be like, it's good now, go, we've done it.
It's hilarious.
Then I'll deal with whatever it is.
Like for me, it's like one of the best feeling games I've played this year, which is just hilarious, isn't it? Like maybe I've not encountered the same issues that you have. Maybe it's because I just stuck to quality mode for the vast majority of it. Or maybe I've just got very lucky, but it's played well for me, and I would encourage going back to it. They might have fixed it since. They might be a little bit more stable if you try it in quality mode and don't go
I always jump between the two, and it's like, okay. It's a weird thing, because like we talked about this last week, about like it does prioritize responsiveness above all, which is what I want. Like you want the game to respond to you and cut off certain animations to let you do different things. And I said a weird thing where when I was jumping between graphics modes, that was kind of compounded by like, you know, jumping around the Kobo area and like doing front flip, going into a wall animation, jumping back out of it again, going into some combat. Yeah, the combat feels great, but it's just the frame rate knitting it all together where it was like, this just feels janky. This just feels like unpolished kind of thing.
Oh.
Not to wound the man, but I mean, at this point, because it's been a good few days, I'm going to go back to it. I'll see what it's like. Maybe it'll be completely fine. But you know, when you're in that weird headspace of, I mean, for me, it's paralyzing trying to pick between those two modes. I hate it. I hate that we have to do it. And then like I go between the two and I'm like, oh, but I guess the other one was better for this.
Right.
Does it feel smoother? Is that just me? Like, I hate all that stuff.
I totally get it as well. I got that for Resident Evil 4. Mm-hmm. Like I had a major kind of option paralysis at the beginning of that game where, you know, we've said we're flicking through the frame rate mode versus the resolution mode, ray tracing on versus ray tracing off, hair strands on versus hair strands off. And it was a bit nightmare-ish because I didn't feel like I was getting the best or at least a stable experience on whatever I chose. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, like I said, with the exception of those very specific hiccups, overall I've managed to have a really good and solid time on quality mode on Jedi Survivor. But even saying that, you know, that's not me necessarily wholeheartedly defending the game, because it's shipped with more than one mode, and all of those modes should be playable and fully optimized.
Yeah.
The fact is they're not, and you can get a good experience, but you know, everyone is totally in their rights if they say that's not good enough, because it's kind of not good enough for a AAA game like this.
Yeah, and it's doubly annoying or just sad when it's just like everything is so good otherwise. Like the game's direction is great. I love Kyle, I love the world. Like everything's, we talked so much about it last week. The combat is so satisfying, like you said. It feels great when it works, but for me, there's always a part of me that I'm fighting, but it is really good.
I think you're going to love it. As someone who loves movement system in games and like the ability to essentially kind of like get through combat encounters in the coolest and most kind of player-driven ways possible, this kind of has that across the board, and the amount of movement options it gives you by the end of the game are kind of crazy. Like, I didn't really like the platforming in the first game. I thought it dragged it down a little bit, was a little bit too slow, was a little bit too rote, but the mechanics that this game adds to the mechanics that you already got in the first title are incredible. Like, it's as fun to platform in this game, I think, as it is to fight now, finally, because it just feels so cool, it feels so kinetic, has such momentum behind it, and I didn't expect that going into it. I thought they might have even minimized that element because maybe I thought we're getting away from that kind of Uncharted style scripted climbing sequence or the God of War style scripted climbing sequence, but here they're going, no, we're just properly turning this into a platformer now, and he is like your Mario style
you know, you're speaking my language now.
I know.
Mario style.
There's one bit that's like a major like platforming set piece where you unlock a new ability for the first time, and I thought of you. I thought Scott, I think, might love this. The fact that this is in the game.
Okay, that's cool. Because yeah, I know that there's quality there. Like everyone is praising this game. No one's had a bad word to say about it apart from the technical side of it. But I think I'm going to boot it back up, go on the quality mode, and just as soon as I move Cal, I'll move him in quality mode.
Yes.
And I'll just force my brain to accept that, and just hopefully it'll be fine.
I think, you know, I don't know the inside of your brain, Scott Taylor, but I think if you boot it up and go straight into quality mode,
that's without, what I'm hoping,
without jumping between,
turn the old usage sharing off.
Turn usage sharing off straight away, and then hopefully you'll have a better time.
Yeah, if not, I'll be back on Dredge, my little tugboat.
Yeah, you will.
Dredging up the depths. Next up, we should talk about the specifics of the Sony showcase that is coming soon. Welcome, everybody, to the video version of this. This is from the What Culture Gaming podcast feed, the wind-up that me and Josh do every Monday.
It's a lovely little show.
It's a lovely little show. Please go subscribe to the What Culture Gaming podcast feed, where you can get a selection of podcasts every week and little select chunks we will put on in video form. We're going to break down the upcoming PlayStation showcase, which is yet to be officially revealed. However, it's doing the rounds in all the rumor circles, and the more people keep talking about it, it seems like there'll be an official announcement very soon, which... If you keep up with the video side of things, you follow us along on the news. Every time we do a news video about something that's rumored, it tends to break as we're talking about it. So chances are there's probably an official statement out there by now. Anyway, the few different mentions of this. Jeff Grubb over at Giant Bomb. He's also got the Jeff Grubb Games Mess podcast.
Yeah, he does.
Saying that the showcase will happen at the latest by May 25th. The last PlayStation showcase you found or you looked into was September 2021.
Blew my mind that, ridiculous. By the way. Obviously, state of play since then, but the last major PlayStation showcase billed as a showcase, September 2021. Crazy.
So, they have loads of different things to catch up on. We also had a regular leaker, Tom Henderson, saying that so far he knows nothing about what's coming. That makes it really, really exciting. But if you start going, looking a little bit wider, there are various rumors that have been doing the rounds the last few months that make sense if you wanted to turn the eyes of the world in your direction, you would cover the likes of the things that we're going to get into. So we'll break these things down. The first one is the new Sony handheld. It doesn't have a name yet, but I put this at the top because I feel like if they want to just go, hey, we recognize the Switch as a thing, there's apparently a new Sony handheld coming. This was reported by Tom Henderson over on Insider Gaming. Apparently, though, it's remote play only. It seems like it's made for households and not on the go, which I think is a ludicrous misstep.
Yeah, I also agree with you here. The Switch famously won me round to the idea of handhelds. I was never a handheld fan before the Switch hybridized the entire approach to being a docked console or being something you can play on the go. Mm-hmm. And that got me excited about the potential for Sony to revitalize their Vita section and release maybe a Vita 2 that has the amazing functionality that the Vita had, but actually appealed to people, and people would want to buy it, maybe with Sony's newfound, not newfound, but kind of reemergence on top again after the PS3 era and like the early days of the PS4. Now that they have all of these games that people want to play, why not give them the option to play that on a dedicated handheld? Mm. So when this news was kind of first doing the rounds, I got really excited, and then like you said, it's apparently like a cloud-based thing or some kind of remote play style thing, which is cool to have, but it's not the return to the handheld space that we want, I don't think, necessarily.
The thing with me, because I love the PlayStation Vita, and anyone who has a Vita knows that that was one of the most overlooked systems in PlayStation history or in console history by itself, and Sony very much shot themselves in the foot right at the end of that system's reveal by saying that it had a separate storage. You had to buy PlayStation first-party storage memory cards, and that was very much one of the main things that killed it off. I think that the landscape is a lot more open to handheld first-party games now, like the idea of console games on the go. So them doing this makes so much sense, but then they've kind of handicapped themselves again by just saying, like, actually, it's, well, in theory, the report so far is just saying that it'll be remote play only. Maybe that's just not the case when we get the official announcement, but
maybe not.
I don't know.
I suppose it would make sense. It would be consistent with what they've done before. They kind of made a push for remote play in the PS4 era, and that was well received enough. It wasn't this mass adoption thing, but it was a nice option to have. And I think that's kind of, it's going to come down to their messaging and their marketing. How are they going to convey what this thing is? Are they going to try to sell it as a proper handheld, or are you going to try to sell it as just a nice option for players who kind of want to take their PS5 games remote? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but Xbox already has a similar system to
they let you stream stuff. I mean, same kind of similar thing the PlayStation has. Like, you can get your Android phone, get whatever, and go play in bed with a sort of a attached device. Like, Xbox has been all over that stuff in terms of the various different systems you can bolt onto a phone. Yeah, maybe there's like big numbers there, and they're just thinking, hey, if we just give people a specific first party alternative to having to faff with controller options for a phone, that maybe there's a whole market there that I just don't know about. There's a whole bunch of people playing first-party PlayStation or Xbox games on their phones, and they would rather have a handheld device to connect it better. We'll see, though. That's just one of the rumors that's been doing the rounds for a while. The next thing down is Xbox Era's Nick Baker saying that there'll be a PlayStation 3, Metal Gear Solid 3 remake as exclusive to PlayStation. And this has been doing the rounds for ages. Honestly, ever since the pachinko version of Metal Gear came out.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Where all the cutscenes were remade for Metal Gear Solid 3. But this has been rumored quite a lot, backed up by Jez Corden from Windows Central. As a talking point, this is a long time coming.
It absolutely absolutely is. It's kind of, it's almost a joke at this point, right? It's either going to be Metal Gear Solid Original, Metal Gear Solid 3, but like you said, you know, everyone's kind of pointing towards 3 because of those pachinko machines and because of other rumors that, you know, people might be back in the studio, people might be re-recording some music for it. They've already got HD versions of the cutscenes. Mm-hmm. Everything is kind of in place for them to kind of put their hands together and just release it.
David Brenda.
But, you know, I think it's interesting if it is true. Like, obviously, Metal Gear Solid 3 is the start of the timeline, you know, canonically in terms of every major story in that series. But it's an interesting one to kind of start with if you're going to go about remaking those games.
Yes. That's the weird thing is, like, why would you start with Metal Gear Solid 3? To some degree, it's the fan favorite, but it's like, if you've only ever heard of Metal Gear, what's the big deal with this franchise? And you gave someone Metal Gear Solid 3 as their first one, they would get it. They would get why it's so over the top, and it is this East meets West anime-infused approach to action movies. But the story in 3, I mean, that retroactively would spoil all the stuff in 2, like all the stuff with the Patriots and where they started. And
yes.
Like, because at the time, obviously 2, then 3, it was filling out the history of them. I just think 3 is a weird starting point, but maybe they have data on this that we don't know.
I mean, like you said, I think it is a fan favorite, so I'm sure there is data, and I will absolutely buy it. It's just always a question with Metal Gear of, you know, how do you kind of onboard, for lack of a better term, a new audience into the franchise? Like, where do you start? For me, MGS1 has always been the most ripe for a remake because I love the original version of that game. You know, same. I love its atmosphere. I love its PS1 style gameplay. But obviously, kind of like Resident Evil 2, there's been such a gulf in technology since that game came out that, you know, you could reinterpret that game in a bunch of different ways that make it feel like a significant overhaul and a significant remake. Whereas I think with MGS3, because that kind of plays so well and still has a lot of modern trappings, even if, you know, parts of it are definitely dated mechanically, you kind of already got a great version of it that you can hold up with the MGS 2, 3, and Peace Walker HD collection. Like, those games still are great and are very accessible today.
That's the thing, right? Because for me, it was like, because overall, Konami are trying to get back in the gaming space. They have been doing various collections, like the TMNT stuff, and like, they're sort of reminding people in I mean, there's another Konami thing to get to as well, but I feel like overall, they're sort of just nuzzling people, go, we're still here. We've got some things.
Yeah.
But I also think in that regard, you know, an idea of a Metal Gear Solid 3 remake makes financial sense, because they have the cutscenes already ready, or the majority of them for the pachinko machine. Also, MGS3 Subsistence, I think, is the only Metal Gear before 4 that has the 3D camera over the shoulder already prototyped. Like, those levels already work.
Right, yeah.
Whereas 1 and 2, obviously, you've got Twin Snakes, but like, they were never really done that way. So maybe that's another thing where it's like, well, we can upscale all the textures and everything. We already know that the level meshes will all work. It depends how deluxe a remake this is.
I think it's... Well, that's another question before I jump into my next point. Like, what do you want them to do with an MGS3 remake? Do you want to see a proper Resi 2-style overhaul, or do you just want the original game touched up with HD textures that were originally in the game? Like, I'm gonna say this, but I don't mean the baggage that came with this release. Do you want it to be more in the style of GTA Definitive Edition if that game was, you know, good and working, or would you want to see it more of a Resi 2 style project?
I would take the GTA Definitive Edition upscale. Spyro is maybe another example of that too, where it's just you take the feel and you just change the graphics. I don't necessarily need much to change about the way that MGS3 feels. Although you could modernize the controls and stuff, the feel of it in general. Those games are really unique. Like, if you go back to them now, like, we're talking about, we're right on the cusp of, you know, just before Resident Evil 4, and it's like that sort of way before Gears of War, like games that we're experimenting with over the shoulder, or like aiming down sights. Like, that was a whole magazine art back in the day. You can aim down the sights in MGS3. So yeah, for me, it's like, it depends how much they think that stuff has aged well. For me, if I'm replaying Metal Gears, I know to accept that stuff and expect that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I'm thrown off by them just doing MGS3. I don't know who's asking for that as the first one. I think that's just kind of crazy.
I mean, like I said, I kind of get it. It's the starting point in the timeline. It would work in a way to introduce you to Big Boss and all of the backstory before you maybe jumped into one. And I think more importantly, perhaps, and this is my wild theory that I've just thought about right now. Uh-huh. You know how nostalgia cycles work, you know, like every 20, 30 years or whatever. In this case, it's 20. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of 2000s nostalgia going on right now. Yeah. Not just in the gaming space, but across music and television and fashion, all of that stuff.
Space like, Jam theme on the Diablo trailer.
Early 2000s stuff is in right now. We've seen that in games with, you know, Resident Evil 4, with other games that I just had in my brain and now have completely
Dead Space
locked.
Is a mid-2000s one.
Dead Space is a mid-2000s one. There was another great example that I've just completely blanked on.
Metroid
anyway,
Prime Remastered?
Maybe Metroid Prime Remastered. No, there was something else that was really good and it's completely gone. I promise it was a really good point.
Cool.
But the point is, you know, MGS3 nicely slides into that general era. Silent Hill 2 was the other one I was thinking
there
of. Silent Hill 2. Mm-hmm. But MGS3 kind of sits into that, like, nice PS2 era that we have a lot of fond memories for.
Yes.
And I wonder whether that kind of nostalgia cycle in some ways kind of motivating these games to kind of get remakes now rather than a few years ago or a few years down the line.
Yeah, they better not be skipping over all the 90s.
They better
I want
not.
The board shorts, the Limp Bizkit revivals. I need all that stuff.
Hey,
please.
I want MGS1. This is all I'm saying. I want MGS1 and I want Silent Hill 1 as well. Silent Hill 1 and MGS1.
Silent Hill.
Really, it was a great game. Mm-hmm. And I want both of those games to be more accessible or remade.
Yeah,
please.
I think if you're going to delve back into that catalog, I think it's weird taking the reputation that entire franchise had over time and then delving in and going, like, well, people like that one the most, like with Silent Hill and remaking 2. And it's like, this doesn't necessarily work if you're actually trying to get new fans in. Because, like, I guess we'll see how well Silent Hill 2 sells or whether this would sell well. But for me, I would be immediately confused that I was joining at the wrong point, trying to come in and try and experience this thing that I missed out on.
Well, it's funny you should say that, but Resident Evil 2 remake sold like gangbusters, even though while...
They did have the one remake.
They did, but it was like...
A while ago.
It was like, literally 15 years previously, so I wouldn't even necessarily count that as part of that quote-unquote project, because it plays so different. There was such a gulf of time between them that I think to a lot of people, they would be like, well, where is Resident Evil 1? Because even if you went and bought that game, you'd maybe be disappointed because it's not in the style of 2, 3, and 4 remake.
At least they were available because they did that whole thing in like, what the hell was that, 2015? When they remade the remake and they put the GameCube one out again and it was finally available on new consoles and everything. So at least if you searched on a search bar Resident Evil on your console, at least you get that. Okay, I should start here and whatever. But you don't have that for Metal Gear. Like, you might go searching for Metal Gear Solid 2 and just not be able to find it. And I guess there's the HD version, kind of, but whatever. Something else from Windows Central's Jez Corden. He tweeted on May 7th that he's heard Sony landed a deal with Konami for Silent Hill, Metal Gear, and maybe even a new Castlevania. This is something that has done the rounds a few times. I think we've done a video on this. It just kind of pops up every now and then with various insiders. We should just talk about the reality of if that's true. Like, we've got all these conversations going on with Xbox and the CMA and trying to acquire Activision Blizzard and the idea of the acquisition wars doing the rounds. And then Sony are yet to make that many moves, big moves in that regard. Like, they've bought Bungie. They sort of bought a bunch of mobile teams. But we're yet to see there's always the rumors of Square Enix being acquired or maybe Capcom. Or something. And Konami, we've long theorized that they would make a deal with Sony.
Yeah.
Because they would do all the heavy lifting, all the dev work and everything, and Konami just get to cash the check at the end of the month.
Absolutely. And I think it's a good deal to have. I think, you know, the difference between Microsoft and Sony, and I've said this before, and it's not necessarily a novel thought, but Microsoft come in with the big bucks, like you said, buy publishers and developers outright. Mm-hmm. Whereas Sony, until recently anyway, are more likely to make a deal with a publisher. They're more likely to make a deal with Square Enix to get Final Fantasy 16 on their platform and Final Fantasy 7 Remake on their platform. They're more likely to go to Konami and say, can we cut a deal where we don't take you over anything? We might not even take development in-house necessarily, but we'll cut a deal and all of your games are now exclusive to us. We know you kind of like the money. Do you want the money?
Do you want some money?
You don't have to do much at all. We'll take control. We'll use our good reputation to re-bolster your failing franchises that aren't doing necessarily well under your sole oversight. I just think it makes sense from a business thing. It made sense when it first broke the other year. It's kind of been surprising that it's a rumor that's kind of come and gone, and it seems to be back on the pile, I suppose.
Do you remember when Bluepoint did that really weird cryptic tweet where they seemed to hint at about 5 things at once?
Yeah.
Maybe this has been in the works since then, and they are actually going to be the first-party remake studio, or the first-party... Because it's always that thing where they did Shadow of the Colossus, they are known for these big deluxe remakes, but we never really saw what that... I mean, they did Demon's Souls. It was one of those things where it felt like there were more references in that tweet than what we actually got.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if they've had some sort of top-end meeting of, like, you guys, you're the guys that we give the IP IPs to, and you revitalize them or you remake classic installments. If they remake Symphony of the Night,
ooh,
or if they I'm trying to think of a big Symphony of the Night. I don't know if that would lend itself very well to a AAA 2023 style thing because it's fundamentally side scrolling. But if they do something that has that kind of stature, and then it's on Sony, it's on PlayStation to get it right,
yeah,
and that bolsters Konami's reputation and everything, I could totally.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Cool to see that happening.
Well, I think the rumor for a while was that Blue Point might be doing the MGS original remake, but I think that's a little bit rocky right now. And it's been 3 years, like you said, since they launched Demon's Souls. So they've definitely got something.
Has it been 3 years since Demon's
right
Souls?
Now. At the end of this year, it'll be 3 years since Demon's Souls.
Sticking it.
I know how time goes. How time flies, should
how
I say.
How time slaps you in the
how
face.
How time, you know, picks you up, throws you against
three
the
years,
wall.
Son.
And knocks you out. What was I saying? Something about Demon's Souls, Blue Point. Yeah.
Yes.
I think the big question is, are they going to team up with Konami and do something in the Metal Gear world or in the Castlevania world or Silent Hill or whatever?
Just or, do a Netflix one.
Here's the thing.
Go on.
Or will Sony look at the success of Demon's Souls and how well that was received and say, well, we've got this other game we co-made with From Software called Bloodborne that you might want to remake after you've just, you know, taken on Demon's Souls. You've got the caliber. You've got the quality. We've got this beloved IP we've done nothing with for like 8 years now. Can you please do something with this, please? Make it move.
You're like the most open goal they've had for years, like you said. The kind of thing that they could just drop and say, hey, by the way, it's available now, that would send ructions across social media. That is so obvious to do when it's been September 2021 since their last showcase.
Yes.
They need eyeballs to take notice of what's happening for the rest of the year. Just do the Bloodborne remake.
I mean, look, I'm not saying this is something nice that anyone should do, but Elden Ring just sold all the copies in the world, and if I was Sony, I'd want to leech a little bit off that and be like...
From the makers of Elden Ring?
Yeah, from the makers of Elden Ring. We've got this PlayStation exclusive that a lot of people like. It kind of plays like Elden Ring in a way.
We've got
a lovely remake of it. All I'm saying is, this is a company that is currently remaking Horizon Zero Dawn, and if they remake Horizon Zero Dawn... Why wouldn't they do Bloodborne? We are in this weird era of remakes where even if a game is less than 10 years old, it's going to get remade
just
and be announced.
Again.
And again, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I can see them doing it because there's money to be made And there's a positive fan response if they do it.
I, for one, completely forgot they were remaking Zero Dawn.
I like to push it out of
my
brain. Relive
that trauma yet again.
Yeah.
I guess we are going to get that again. Jez Corden also mentioned in his tweet thread about various things that may or may not happen. Just a little tease there, just saying if you're a Capcom fan or a Dead Rising fan, keep an eye on things going forward. Now, we don't know if that refers to the Sony conference or refers to other things. But again, something worth talking about. Dead Rising as a franchise, as an IP, there's an attempt was made to reframe the tone of that series, and Dead Rising 4 massively tanked, completely bombed. They did have a Dead Rising 5 in production, which leaked, I think, last year.
Yes.
And people got to see what that was going to be like. Do you care about Dead Rising in 2023?
I do. I really do. I saw people in the comments to this announcement, maybe on the Gaming Leaks Reddit, saying, like, remake. And again, I know we're talking a lot about remakes, but remake Dead Rising 1, because Dead Rising 1 is still so good. It holds up so well. It's a great game, a unique game with interesting mechanics that the franchise kind of, you know, just binned off as it went along to try and get a bigger mainstream audience. But I have a soft spot for Dead Rising. A bunch of the games I've not even played. I didn't touch 4 myself.
Right.
But I have a fondness for it, and I would like to see it come back, but only if it can be done right, and if it's not just going to be another bland open world zombie kill fest, which is what people called the first game, but it was way more than that. It had way more to it mechanically. Yeah. It was more of a survival horror game in terms of its mechanics, even though its tone was very much a goof off.
A big old goof.
Between Frank West and the psychopaths, as they were known. Yes. But I'm fond of it, and I want it done right, whether that's on Xbox or whether that's on PlayStation.
I have by far the fondest memories of Dead Rising 1.
Yeah.
Like you said, that game is so overlooked for what it actually was. Like you said, it gets referred to as this almost like a Musou game, where it's like a Dynasty Warriors, where you're just taking out loads of zombies all at once.
Yeah.
But it had way more threat to it than that. You did get used to being there. But yeah, you had all the timers and all the idea of managing your days and like trying to save people. And yeah, dude, maybe do that again.
Come on, guys.
Remember the core of the IP.
Here's the thing.
Do it.
Capcom has kind of been on a roll for a little while now. You know, we talked about Resident Evil there. With the exception of maybe Resi 3, which even then wasn't that bad, kind of had success after success. You know, Devil May Cry is in a really good place. Monster Hunter is in an exceptional place.
Not Dino Crisis, though.
Well, yet.
Exo Primal.
Yet.
What's that?
But I keep calling it Dead Island. Dead Rising.
Yes.
Why not, you know, modern Capcom, take that title and do it well. Don't give us the Resi 6 version of that franchise. Give us the Resi 2 version of that franchise.
You kind of already have the tech from the RE 2, 3, and 4 remakes. Use the RE engine. Get a little of the gore going there. You could blow some limbs off.
I like the sweet nothings you're whispering to me right now.
That's what I'm saying. We also have, this is just in a wider sense, there's a new AAA project that's already in motion. It was reported on last October by VGC, by Video Games Chronicle, in 2022, from a combination of staff from Naughty Dog and also from Visual Arts. This is just a way of saying that there might be a brand new IP alongside all the remakes, alongside all the expected stuff. It's a weird thing because I feel like we just talked about a bunch of remakes and that idea of, like you said, it's not like you only want remakes, but I feel like that's the thing. I need the new stuff. I feel like when the PS5 was announced, we got so many games that were announced, even if they were just teaser trailers or whatever, that we haven't heard from. That game that looked a bit like Death Stranding, the one with the little astronaut and the little girl.
Pragmata, I think that was called.
Stuff like that, where they sort of said, like, new IPs, guys, that's the future. And then we've had a remake generation so far.
Yeah.
And so, or like an iterative sequel so far. So I'm curious if there's something that was built from the ground up for the PlayStation 5, take full advantage of the SSD, and you had full creative, there's no creative limits, what do the staff from Naughty Dog and Visual Arts come up with?
Yes.
I really want to see that.
That's the exciting thing, because when I was, you know, thinking about this showcase and what Sony might have to show, I love a lot of the stuff that's probably on the docket, all the remakes we've talked about there, you know, sequels to Ghost of Tsushima. We've obviously got Spider-Man 2. We've got Wolverine.
Oh, we're
going to
run down Josh Brown.
Oh, we're going to run down.
Brown's games that might be there.
Josh Brown's games that might
be there. We've got notes for days.
Those are just some of the sequels that are almost certainly going to be there. And some of the surprises that might happen all seem to be based around sequels. But like you said, you know, last year was so spectacular because it was so full of new IP or returning franchises rebooted in an interesting way, like God of War. Whereas this time, we kind of know what the stuff is going to be. That doesn't make it any less exciting, but you kind of want to see what the PS5's flagship new IP is going to be. And more importantly, who's that going to come from? We know the Days Gone studio, Sony Bend, is working on a new IP. We know Naughty Dog probably has a new IP in development somewhere, whether that comes out before the next Last of Us or whatever is unknown at the moment. But it's like, could this game between Visual Arts, Naughty Dog, and this new studio, could that be one of the defining games of the PS5. It's way too early to tell, but I want at least the hype of that. That might be possible.
That we're 3 years in does kind of compound that you don't have that many games that you need a PS5 to play. And I'm a broken record with that sentiment, but I still want stuff that I can just hold up in a genuine positive sense and go, you need to play this. You need to see this. Not that they don't exist at all.
You ever played Returnal? Returnal is what I'm holding right now.
It's not Returnal. Returnal's all right. It's not what I want. Speaking of new things, though, the next Bungie IP, this was trademarked years ago, way before the acquisition. Sony acquired Bungie in January 2022. But they registered a trademark for the name Matter, and there was a piece of artwork that came alongside it. So it seemed like they had an idea in motion for whatever the next IP was going to be from Bungie, their next, their first IP since Destiny. And like we said, they got acquired by Sony, so it would make sense to then, even if it's only at the teaser stage, to be like, hey, the next game from the creators of Destiny. Like, as rocky as Destiny 1 was, and as weird as that trajectory of that IP was, Destiny, and especially Destiny 2, are just insanely popular, massively influential, even though Destiny 1 did land in a state. I feel like everybody is still, like Suicide Squad, trying to make a four-person co-op looter shooter. And you kind of hope that they move on from that and Matter isn't another Destiny. Like, I don't know what Bungie do, but Bungie makes some of the most satisfying gameplay in the game.
They do.
And I want to know what that is.
I think they're one of the most interesting teams that we're talking about today, because I always forget that Sony even bought Bungie, because their relationship since that purchase has been so strange for acquisitions, or at least in terms of how gaming acquisitions have gone down previously, because it seems like from everything that Sony has talked about, their acquisition of Bungie wasn't necessarily even for games. It was for the live...
It was for the netcode or something?
Yeah, the netcode, like their live service expertise to help them create other games. Obviously, there are going to be some titles for Sony machines in there somewhere down the line, but it's just been a strange acquisition to the point where they almost feel still like their own independent studio.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether Sony kind of like comes out for this showcase and kind of pushes their relationship a little bit harder to kind of, you know, say, oh, no, don't forget. We actually own Bungie, and they have all of these games coming, or at least a couple new IP, and like they're... You can buy a PlayStation 5 now. And
what if
you get that?
Because like you said, they did acquire them for the netcode. There was a whole conversation around Sony pushing more into mobile. The few of the studios they've bought, Firesprite, I think, they're all mobile teams. There might be a segment of the showcase that is just, and here's all the mobile games. Here's, and then maybe Bungie oversee that, brought to you by Bungie or something.
I've been so starved for classic, gaming showcases. I'd take a bit of that. I would. I'm so sick of
just for the outrage.
I'm so sick of 20-minute state of plays that leave no imprint and everyone forgets about as soon as they're done. I want a little bit of outrage. I want a little bit of boring slog to get through. I want them to talk for 15 minutes about the handheld.
Mark Cerny, damn it.
I want Mark Cerny to come back.
If you say his name enough, he'll appear.
And do a PowerPoint. I want stuff like that alongside the announcements, because I'm, like I said, it's been so long since we've had a PlayStation showcase, and it feels so long since we've had a proper E3 period where the hype is sky high, and now going into the showcase, going into the Microsoft one in June, and going into Summer Games Fest. I just kind of want that old school feeling back of, look at all this stuff we have. You're not going to love it all, but we're at least going to give you stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I would welcome that. I'm just curious what they're building, because there's so much stuff going on, like I mentioned before, with the acquisitions on the Xbox side. Nintendo is still very much on their own little island. They're always going to do that. And then it's always like, okay, what are Sony going to do to potentially respond to the amount of acquisitions that are happening with Xbox? And they're building, the mentions of their own acquisitions. There's mention of the mobile space. They don't really seem to be caring that much about a Game Pass alternative. There was like an insider leak that Jim Ryan said they don't really consider it much of a competition to anything. So I'm kind of curious, just overall, how they think the future of PlayStation should be, and whether they want the PlayStation logo to be associated with mobile gaming as much as it is first party.
This is what I'm so starved for. Again, I'll use that
term hungry.
Again. I'm hungry.
It is lunchtime, to be fair.
We did this before we got food. Can you believe it? This is why I'm rambling all over the place and thinking of crisp sandwiches. No, with Sony, I think they're in like a good position right now. Yes. Obviously, they are. They've got games that are coming out this year that everyone's looking forward to. They're selling PS5s, crazy amount of PS5s, they're doing well. But what I worry with that kind of success is I worry about complacency. I worry about them getting to the point where they kind of feel like they don't even need a lot of fanfare because they're going to, quote-unquote, win anyway.
What was that statistic, super quick, on Jedi Survivor?
Like, yeah,
81% or 2% of copies were sold on PS5
to
Xbox?
At least in the UK, the physical sales of Jedi Survivor, it was 82% on PlayStation 5 and, you know, what's the remaining? 18% on Xbox consoles. Microsoft, I want them to do well, but they kind of keep imploding. And I feel like Sony doesn't even have to fight them like they did in the early PS4 days to kind of reassert dominance because they're at the top. And that's fine, and they're going to continue to succeed. And I'm not worried about the games at all, but I kind of want a little bit of spark. I want a little bit of competition. Competition is good for the industry. You know what I mean? Like, I want a strong Microsoft. I want a strong Sony, and I want them battling for our attention. I don't want Sony just to be able to be like, we can sit out an entire year, show you nothing, and you're going to buy our games anyway.
Yeah, and we'll put the price up again.
That is what it is. But like I said, as an entitled gamer, TM, I want a bit of hype. I want a bit of something. I want a bit of razzmatazz. I want Sony to kind of wine and dine me with a bit of razzle dazzle. Wine and dine me with a showcase. At least Microsoft does that and gets me hyped. Sony, in the past year, I think, had big games that they could have shown off, and they were just like, we'll put a state of play out or a blog post near at the time, and that'll be done. I don't like that way of doing things.
No, I think that's very efficient, but I think that a lot of the... Because Nintendo Directs have a reputation for giving you something crazy. Even if it's at the very end, they could do 25 minutes of random indie stuff, not slagging off indie stuff, but random stuff you've not heard of, and then, hey, by the way, here's a new Tears of the Kingdom announcement, or whatever it is. And I feel like the Sony State of Play is rarely ever matched up to that. It was very, very rare that they said anything was available right now, or they didn't end on something that really turned heads. There have been those examples, but if you look at the more extended showcases, if that's not been since 2021, you would hope that this is a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're flying, they're way out in front, but there's still that conversation on what have you got for the rest of the year? We know Spidey's coming. It'd be cool just to fill those things in.
Yeah, that's it. I was just reiterate what you said, because we know what's coming this year. I think there could be enough games this year to sell the PS5. But what comes after that? What comes after the Final Fantasies drop and Horizons dropped and God of War's dropped and Spider-Man 2's dropped? Mm. We know we've got Wolverine, but what's the roadmap for the rest of the generation looking like? They had such a strong roadmap for the second half of the generation in the PS4 era. For me, that was far and away better than the first half of the PS4 generation.
Yes.
And won them that generation for me, the amount of new IPs that they introduced, the amount of great sequels that they had. Mm. And I want to see that roadmap. I want a little glimpse of it. I want a little taste of it.
What if...
Go on.
It's Returnal 2.
Oh, baby! Oh, you talk about being wined and dined. They would just have to stop the show there.
That's a full bottle. I'm just thinking...
That's a full bottle.
That's a full bottle, my friend.
Uncorked it.
With Returnal, I mean, that game had DLC. It definitely has its fans. The people who played absolutely love it, 10 out of 10. There's enough of a fan base there. And it's been long enough. It's been like 2 years or whatever. There's potential. If Returnal 2 is there, you heard it here first.
Don't give me hope, because that game, like you said, you know, it was really well received from the people who played it. Not by Scott Telford.
I did play it and hated it. Carry on.
By some people who played it said it was like one of the best games of the generation. But I don't think it sold that well. Hopefully it was enough to be a success. But if it was announced, I would be extremely happy, but I'm not kind of holding my breath for it, because I just never know with these kind of quote-unquote smaller Sony teams. You know, if Days Gone wasn't a huge success enough to warrant a sequel, then in this era of we are putting all of the money into the safest, biggest bets possible, I don't know, sadly, if there's room for Returnal 2.
We'll have to wait and see.
But the
tea leaves are in the right direction. The next game down is Mortal Kombat 12, something that has been mentioned alongside MK's, I think it's 35th anniversary right now, maybe 30th. Either or, Ed Boon's been over on Twitter celebrating Mortal Kombat in general. Still not remaking Shaolin Monks.
Oh, man,
still not putting Shaolin Monks out.
Ed!
He keeps doing it. He did a Twitter poll the other month asking what people would want to see. Shaolin Monks dominated that poll, Edward, and it's still not available.
I love that, by the way.
Why not?
Time is a flat circle. You say the other month. I'm certain that was like 2 years ago at this point. But still, the point remains, he should have listened to that poll and done Shaolin Monks by now.
Either way, if you follow the insider breadcrumb trail, NetherRealm used to do Mortal Kombat and then Injustice, but there was a whole bunch of shakeups happened. I forget the specific mergers that happened behind the scenes, but things got shaken around. They had to focus on Mortal Kombat 12 instead, and that would apparently be the case. It seems to be the case because it lines up with the anniversary month anyway. I wonder about exclusivity. It's not like MKs have had PlayStation exclusivity in the past, other than like a Kratos character in MK9.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if, oh my God, old Kratos, if you put him in MK12. But yeah, that's something that they could just sort of go, hey, by the way, this game, it would make sense for NetherRealm to hang back and showcase it at something like a PlayStation event.
Absolutely. And you know, like, Sony's showcases have never been just full of exclusives of first party stuff. Like, that's always a huge chunk of it. But they also use this to show off major third-party releases. Like, they'd love to get the Resident Evil games, for instance, at their big events. So I don't see them not getting MK12 if they can, just to have it at their press conference and not get it exclusive or anything like that. Maybe get some exclusive content, but just to have it there, to have the world premiere of that at and tie their brand to a huge franchise that people love. I can see that being there.
Plus, like, I mean, it's been like 4 years since MK11. Yeah. So it's, and all the DLC. I mean, there was a whole thing where Ed Boon and NetherRealm said that they were blown away by how successful the different character packs did. They extended all that stuff. They did a story campaign expansion as well, which I love. I mean, I love MK. It's one of my favorite franchises. But I feel like you could do an MK12 and just reveal where everything's at, because I'm not going to go into spoilers, but the way that MK11 ends is kind of like a fresh start for everything.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious what the franchise even looks like at this point.
Not that it's ever been in a bad spot recently anyway, but no. MK is in a great spot. And I can see why WB, who again are another team, company, whatever, I knew it was company, entity. Entity, public corporation, who love safe bets and have been, you know, canning a bunch of stuff that haven't been safe bets or they don't think will make them all of the money. So I can see them saying, yes, give us another Mortal Kombat, because we've got the movie franchise, which is doing well. Mm-hmm. They've just announced, or it's been rumored that they've cast, you know, lead roles for the new film, Cal Urban, apparently is Johnny Cage, if rumors to be believed. The first movie was a success. Yes. MK11, of course, like you said, was a huge, massive success. So why not keep that ball rolling in their eyes with a new game?
Insane is it that Cal Urban apparently is going to be Johnny? I love Cal Urban. I love the boys. I love everything Cal Urban's done. I love Johnny Cage.
Yeah.
They are not the same at all.
What if they could be?
I guess
it could be
somehow. I don't know. I picture him more like a Ryan Reynolds type energy. I don't know.
No, you killed us. No.
He could be more playful. I feel like maybe because I've only seen Carl Urban and the boys for like 4 years now, and he's like very much not Johnny Cage in that show.
I'm trying to think what I've seen Carl Urban in where he plays like a funny guy.
Well, that's the thing, right? When does he ever do that?
Well, he's playing it, and it's definitely something because I can picture him like making jokes and being like arrogant.
Could he have a chest tattoo that says Johnny though?
Maybe.
That's a very specific strand of human. I don't know if he's that strand.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, this is the games and projects Josh Brown thinks will be their official list. Now, we covered them a little bit. We mentioned them before, but we'll run these things down. Number one, the most obvious one, is Spider-Man 2. That is overdue a gameplay showcase, and it's coming later this year. Do you think it'll be co-op? Do you think they'll show off some sort of co-op gameplay section?
What a question.
I'm just curious if that game's actually co-op or not.
I don't...
It's Spider-Man and Miles Morales.
I know. I wonder whether we...
I don't want it.
I don't want it. I wonder, though, whether that'll be a post-launch thing. Maybe in the DLC, they'll experiment with that. I feel like they might have said if it was co-op already, but they might not, because they might have been saving it for this to be like, look, we've got this co-op element, and here's where you can pre-order the game, and here's a big gameplay showcase. It's coming out in September. Enjoy!
The co-op thing obviously started as like just a general, okay, you have two main characters, assumedly it'll be co-op or whatever. I wonder how they frame that game. There's so many story threads that we want to pick up on from the main game. There's all the stuff with Venom. There's loads of things going on with the way that they've sort of set out their table for their version of the IP.
Yeah.
Just one of them. And I want to just see what they're doing next regardless. I kind of hope there's not a forced quote-unquote or like a co-op component that you should see.
Yeah, I think after Gotham Knights and after the Suicide Squad reception to that game's recent gameplay demo, I don't want any false co-op, but I'm not against co-op in theory, because it could be really cool to swing around the city together as two different Spider-Men.
Yeah, if you were fighting some dudes and you just had to leave like a setting on where it's like matchmaking is on or something, and I can literally swing in to help you. He's doing a little face.
I
thought I'd like that.
When you said that out loud, it makes it feel like an online game when you do that.
Yeah.
And I also kind of don't.
I would also turn all the thing that I just told you to leave on, I would turn that off. Just in case some random person comes in. Turn all those things off. Next thing down is The Last of Us Factions. And this is this is fascinating because the more Naughty Dog have talked about it, alongside the various leaks for it, said that it works as a dedicated single player game.
Yeah.
But they're also building it like the multiplayer add on to The Last of Us 2. Obviously, The Last of Us Factions, the factions mode was in the original Last of Us, so we know that it's the Last of Us multiplayer overall. But I'm curious whether this works as the next Last of Us as well.
I don't know, man. This is the thing. This is why it's so fascinating, because obviously it's grown into this bigger project at this point. It's been 3 years again. I keep going back to that number. 3 years since The Last of Us Part 2 came out. So they've had time to work on this. We've had a few teasers here and there. We've seen some concept art. Mm. We've got those quotes that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be ambitious, and I hope it's going to succeed, but I'm very trepidatious, because it almost feels like this is Sony's first dipping of their toes into the live service pool, at least from a first-party perspective. And, you know, you've got a franchise with the caliber of The Last of Us, a dev with the caliber of Naughty Dog. And I would like to think they can blend single-player and multiplayer, but we've seen so many attempts at that haven't quite
worked. I don't know how you do that.
I don't know how you do it in a way that satisfies both audiences. Yeah. But, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I hope this showcase is where we finally see more.
If they can do some sort of gameplay mode that is a bit like The Division's, what was that middle bit in The Division in the sea?
Dark Zone, I think.
Where you genuinely felt quite scared of other players when you were there, because they could just down you in a couple of hits. And you were like, everything was radial audio. So maybe you were hiding and you heard people walk past you or run past you, and you had to sneak around everybody. If they can do something like that, alongside the team deathmatch stuff, I would take that.
Well, here's the thing, right? I know you hate me for this, maybe deep down in your bones, I want this game to be a battle royale game. I want it to be an extraction game, a blend the two. Like, I loved factions. Mm. Yeah, it was definitely called factions, right? The multiplayer suite in Last of Us 1.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that for now. The multiplayer suite in The Last of Us 1, I bloody loved, but that was kind of like team deathmatch based. There were some objective modes, of course, and there was the meta framing of you have this camp that you need to save, but I just think this world makes so much sense to be melded with the genre of Battle Royale or something like Tarkov or whatever, where you're kind of in a zone. There's a lot of other people. Maybe you have to complete objectives within that zone, but it's got this PvP VE element in a big map. I just think that just sits right with me. It makes it to me, that's more exciting than just a big team deathmatch.
Yeah, I think it's for the thing with The Last of Us is the more you gamify it, the more you take away from quote unquote what The Last of Us is, because it's so cinematic, it's so considered, it's so well paced, and it's so beautifully acted and everything else, that if you start bringing in all these rules of like, go get the bag or go get the flag or go like whatever, like multiple players are trying to do this thing, I wonder if that just feels weird.
Well, I think they can contextualize it within the world of The Last of Us quite well. You know, I think they did that with the first game to a certain extent, where you were going out and you were kind of collecting resources within each round and you were bringing them back to your camp. If they make that camp a physical thing that you're actually upgrading and that you actually are invested in tangibly rather than just seeing it through text and concept art, like, I think that can incentivize different types of play within the matches themselves that make narrative sense, because, you know, you're out surviving, you're out scavenging, you're bringing that stuff back to build up your community, if that's what the game is. I think that's a cool element that I personally would dig a lot.
I'm just curious about it. Like, it's Naughty Dog, I trust them implicitly. The idea that Sony have invested so much in these different multiplayer components, whether it's just weird business meetings between them and Bungie to make sure they get the netcode right or whatever it is, I'm curious what Naughty Dog do when they are trying to make a dedicated multiplayer game that kind of serves as a single player just because of how assumedly weighty thematically it'll be.
I'll tell you this as well.
Go on.
I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but I like The Last of Us Part 2. I don't know if you guys know this.
Just
I like The Last of Us Part 2. Uh-huh. But what I love about The Last of Us Part 2 is the gameplay. I know people slag off Naughty Dog sometimes for saying, you know, the cinematics are great, the stories are great, but the gameplay doesn't cut the mustard. For me, The Last of Us Part 2 is one of the best playing games, action games.
Way better than Red Dead 2?
Action games. I'm holding in my anger, but I kind of agree, you know? It is better. It flows so well. It has such a sense of punch and weight to it. I like just messing around in the combat encounters in that game. And you look online, you see videos that people have put together that are so cinematic. You know, you're performing all of these acrobatic moves. It's intense. It's violent.
Mm-hmm. Like, shout out to Stunny Legend.
There you go.
One of the best accounts you can find.
I'm going to have to investigate them now.
Oh, so good.
But I just think it has the mechanical framework that you can apply that to a multiplayer game, and hopefully it would play well, because that thing is... It's pristine from a gameplay perspective, and I don't think it gets enough credit for that.
No, we've also not really had like a really grounded, brutal third person, you know, multiplayer game. Like, you get, I'm trying to think of like the most brutal, grisly multiplayer games where it really matters if you die. Something like Hell Let Loose kind of stands out. But still, I feel like there's a lot of ground for them to do a you know, Battle Royale, it's meaningful. If you die, you have to reset the whole thing. Like, there are ways to make those death matches really feel like you're in an encounter with other humans struggling to survive.
Yeah.
Kind of like a big 3D version of This War of Mine or something, where you're choosing to go to different places.
Yeah.
I'm just fan making it now, but I feel like that would be cool. We also have down here Ghost of Tsushima 2. It is long overdue, 5 years since the last Ghost of Tsushima. I believe what? 2018, wasn't it?
What?
Wasn't it? I'm pretty sure it was. Half a decade ago, Josh Brown.
That cannot be right. That came out the same year as Last of Us Part 2, didn't it?
Am I completely wrong in my life?
Like, if that's half a decade old.
In the edit.
I will.
That was 2020. What's wrong with my brain? That's still 3 years, though.
Still 3 years.
How much do I need a sandwich? Anyway, that was 2020. Yeah, Ghost of Tsushima, I feel like they'll probably tease it then in that case. I was thinking it might just be released later this year.
Ooh.
No, not anymore.
I don't know, man. I would love them to shadow drop Ghost of Tsushima for the end of this year. What a year that would be. It's already going to be shaping up to be a great year with the games already out, announced and already out. But if they kind of get that out the door, maybe even early next year, I don't think that's entirely out of the question. That would be incredible. I want to see more from this franchise. Yes. I thought the first game was amazing. I think it's overdue an announcement.
Yeah, same. I think I wanted to get like a bit of story stuff as well. Like, if you've played Ghost of Tsushima, again, no spoilers, but the way that game ends, you have to pick a certain ending, and then it's like, that is always weird fodder for sequels, because it's like, well, which one of these is going to be canon? There's no way you can really get around it, because it involves something that would have to be committed to some way or the other. And I'm very curious what you do for a Ghost of Tsushima 2. But like you said, it plays very well. Final game to get to is the double whammy of Final Fantasies, which I assume they'll end the showcase on. I think we'll get the next bit from Final Fantasy VII Part 2, which is hilarious that that's kind of overlooked right now in the shadow of its own franchise, because Final Fantasy 16 is dominating. There was a recent gameplay showcase of that as well. Quick thoughts on the old Final Fantasy.
I can't wait. This is the year I become a real Final Fantasy fan. I've been flirting around with the idea of it for the past 3 years or so, and I think this is the year, hopefully, if these games are good, where I get to commit to that
idea. Which pixel
idea.
Remaster are you going to play first?
6.
Good, that's the best one.
You've influenced me. What can I say? Scott Tilvin, hashtag influencer. No, I think with Final Fantasy 16, they're obviously going to show it because that is a console exclusive. Mm. So it's one of their, it's their next big game, in fact.
True.
So they will show it, but I don't think they'll show it necessarily extensively because, like you mentioned there, they've already got a massive gameplay demo that recently went up that was really well received. Mm. Whereas Final Fantasy 7 Part 2, we don't really know anything about how that game plays at the moment.
No,
we saw that
yet.
First cinematic trailer, but there's so much of that that is up in the air, and apparently that's coming out at the end of the year, so now is the time to show it off, I think.
I think you kind of placate fans with a Final Fantasy 16 like update or something. You do some sort of thing, hey, this, by the way, this is also PlayStation, and then maybe you end on a 7, like a more story stuff for Remake Part 2, because the bits that we've got so far, they have to kind of play with all the weird, timey-wimey madness that's going on with that remake. But anyway, that's everything for the upcoming showcase, which is, I guarantee it's been revealed by now.
I guarantee
they've said, all these games will be here, these games won't be here, whatever invalidates our entire recording.
That's it, I guarantee it'll be none of the games we've talked about, and they'll announce like Stray 2, and then that's what we'll get.
Gears of War coming to PlayStation. Whatever we need. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for listening. A big old bumper podcast for y'all, and we'll catch you very soon. I should do the actual ending, which is I'm Scott Tilford, that's Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.